This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for what is it? It's what, Wednesday here? No, it's Thursday here, so it might be Wednesday still where you are. Jeez, you can get confusing. You're just having a moment of that in the chat room. I went and flipped something around that I shouldn't have. But anyway, I'm told that I'm killing the studio with my volume, so I'll try and fix that up for him. Hopefully that's better there, Bob. And anyway, that was a fun horn section. We've had a couple of good fun ones. Yesterday was rather interesting. That whole exchange that Peter and I got to get into. Yeah, it was fun. Geez, what are we going to do today? I think I should do some clarifying of something, because it came up again today, and I kind of let a misunderstanding kind of slip by of what the dream time is. And it's because I guess I held back on making comment because I don't want to be seen as being any kind of expert on, and I should know more than I do. So I took a little journey over to a website called dreamtime.net.au, and it's from the Australian Museum, and it has a whole bunch of just general information on Aboriginal issues, and get into the idea of the dream time. I don't know if I'm going to read it before the track of the day or after. Maybe I'll do it after, but I'll set it up here. That Bob said it a couple of times, that dream time is about dreams being reality with the Aboriginal people. And I think there may be an aspect of that somewhere, but that's not really what it is. I thought perhaps I should clear this up. However, it doesn't take when it's been used, I don't think that it's done any harm. I think it's had the right. How do you say the right? The right vibe in the instance. But anyway, I figured this would be a good from the Australian Museum. I would hope that they have it something close to right. And on a little page here, Dreamtime or Dreaming, it says, the expression Dreamtime is most often used to refer to the time before time, or the time of creation of all things, while dreaming is often used to refer to an individual's or group's set of beliefs or spirituality. For instance, an indigenous Australian might say that they have kangaroo dreaming, or shark dreaming, or honey ant dreaming, or any combination of dreamings pertinent to their country. However, many indigenous Australians also refer to the creation time as the dreaming. What is certain is that ancestor spirits came to the earth in human and other forms, and the land, the plants, and the animals were given their form as we know them today. These spirits also established relationships between groups and individuals, whether people or animals, and where they traveled across the land or became or came to a halt. They created rivers, hills, etc., and there are often stories attached to these places. Once their work was done, an ancestor spirit changed it again into animals or stars or hills or other objects. For indigenous Australians, the past is still alive and vital today and will remain so in the future. The ancestor spirits and their powers have not gone. They are present in the forms into which they are changed at the end of the dream time, or dreaming, as the stories tell. And they have a bunch of stories here. The stories have been handed down through the ages and are an integral part of an indigenous person's dreaming. So I guess, you know, they've gotten different versions from different nations and made kind of a, you know, a by-committee version of the stories. So I think I'm going to read one of their creation stories, but I'll do that a little bit later. Because I figure we should do the track of the day thing. So if big guitars and big drums scare you, it's time to go get a cup of tea. But I think this track, it has been overlooked for too long as part of the bumper pool for this program, and so I figured we should just, well, get it in. And this is a band that I dig. I kind of wish I had followed them more closely. I've always appreciated what they do, and politically they've got the right angle. So off of the album Toxicity is the track Toxicity. And if you can make out some of the lyric, it'll be fairly obvious what it's about. But a very, very clever, tricky band. And I don't know, there's something about Tarkanian or whatever his name is, the singer. He's got this very theatric kind of, I don't know, funny guy, funny smart guy kind of vibe to him. But anyway, without further ado, I think we should just, you know, turn it up to 11. This is definitely one that's good for 11. Watch out though, that these kick drums, they're huge. So without further ado, System of a Down, roll it, Bob. don't know why that band always just, there's always kind of like a need to kind of giggle. There's something very tongue-in-cheek for, I can't quite put my finger on it. But I think, David, that's a good pretty spot-on statement. System of Down filled the vacuum that Rage Against the Machine left. Yeah. Great fun, though. Great fun. Still trying to work out these clippies. I wonder why it is doing that tonight. The internet's being very strange. But anyway. Where are we going? It's always kind of nice to have your thoughts or opinions accepted. By others, or not that it's exactly my opinion, but something I've thought for a while. At solveclimate.com, which is a really good website, they have a little post here on geothermal, and I think that solar geothermal is probably one of the best options and crucial to having to getting off of the oil standard and really on a large scale create baseload power, which is important. I mean, the only way we'll never get people to strip back their usage. I mean, we can to a point. Conservation has to be part of design, but I always thought that this would be the cheapest option. Just thinking about the construction costs and the overall power capabilities that once constructed are virtually emissions-free. And so this opinion / news piece, geothermal, cheap, abundant, cheap. And I think that they definitely have to include solar geothermal in these situations as well. Not just taking from the ground, but generating and then storing into the ground and flipping the system into reverse and running in your dark cycle. But this is part of a really great piece, a three-part piece on geothermal energy. And they open it up and say, as America's love affair with coal cools off, geothermal energy is getting hot, hot, hot. Why? Because the secret is out of the bag. Geothermal is cheap and abundant. For $800 million to $1 billion in research and development funding spread out over 15 years, geothermal could be deployed on a scale that would produce more than 100,000 milliwatts of additional new low emissions capacity in the U.S. by 2050. That's less than the price of one 275-megawatt clean coal plant, which doesn't exist, my insertion, and more than 360 times more energy. The best part, the availability of geothermal resource base is ginormous. 130,000 times America's currently yearly consumption of energy. The technology has also developed rapidly. The latest and most promising are enhanced geothermal systems. And most of the key technical requirements to make EGS economical over wide swaths of the country are already in place. It helps that the drilling and reservoir technologies used to mine heat from the earth through EGS are similar to those used for oil and gas. So here we go. We can still use the infrastructure, because that's usually one of the biggest problems with adopting a new major technology, is coming, working it down to a point, or you know, still to this day in a record store, the width of the rows of CDs are still based on an old album size, and the idea was that you could get two or four in the space of an album, and it made, or usually two across, and so it, you know, it was set up that way, the casing and whatnot, so that it could use already in place infrastructure to make it easier, make it cheaper. So here they could end up plugging up basically old dried up oil mines, maybe, or oil fields, maybe. And just last week, the DOE tapped Omart Technologies of Nevada to test MIT's conclusions to build the nation's first commercial-scale EGS site and demonstrate its viability to power America. And I think it's actually already been proven. I don't see even where, you know, you have to be depending on pulling it out of the ground. The idea of solar geothermal, again, I keep bringing it up, but this differs slightly from what I think really is it, but it's still along the same lines. It supports both, and there's nothing wrong with geothermal. I just don't see why you wouldn't have a solar aspect to the system wherever you put it, because it's been shown that the open source SPEGS project can be utilized even at the poles, where it becomes over 12 months, it's full light and dark cycle gone through. So if you're already going to have the turbines and the generators, why wouldn't you just set up a whole bunch of collector mirrors? Seem like you've done the hard part already. You've already got the place to store the stuff that you don't use, and you'd be doubly protected during peak hours. How brilliant. How bloody brilliant. But I've been seeing more about geothermal coming up in just kind of a variety of different places that it seems to be finally getting a little bit more mainstream attention. Because this could actually be the really quick turnaround major replacement that we might require. And hopefully we can take this idea of also it being an open source, like the one system that I really dig, this open source project, is that this has become so crucial to human survival that we need everyone possible on this. So yes, leave your mark. If you can improve, please add, but everyone is allowed to use the technology without having to pay royalties for it. I mean, this is one of the things that, you know, we don't think about. Take a breath, David. Me? Take a breath. Have I been running on? Been given grief from the chat room, and if you're not in the chat room and you have to be on the internet listening to this program, you should come on in. Only takes a moment to sign up, and you can be in with all these insane little images and various versions of hosts doing embarrassing things, and some really intelligent, fun people. But anyway, I reckon this whole idea of geothermal, you know, if it's already large scale that can be done, and has a proven track record already. Now, I think I'll go to this. This was kind of cool, I must say. I believe ELO and the net pointed me to this over on the headonradionetwork.com news blog. This little thing here, bill to outlaw mountaintop removal, take action now. I'm just kind of figuring this is the supposed to be the environmental show, and all our connections with West Virginia and the whole mountaintop removal movement, I figured this needed to be mentioned, and if you want to show your support, please do. State Senator John Hunter of West Virginia has introduced a bill that would ban the atrocity of mountaintop removal. The bill is SB 588. Senator Hunter has extended the record of today's hearing by 5 days so people can submit written comment to SB 588. Please take the time, actions now, write or email him, and let him know you support his efforts. He would like to present to West Virginia's State Senate letters that stress the importance of the legislation. He must be under the immense pressure from King Cole to withdraw his legislation for the future of West Virginia and his residents. We cannot allow that to happen. Let him know we can count on he can count on our support. And the address and his email address are all there, Senator Hunter. What is it? Can I do this? Anyway, maybe ELO can grab it and stick it in the chat room. But hey, I don't know. What do you think the chances are of this? I mean, I was hoping to see something this year on mountaintop removal. I didn't expect to see something right now. It's very, very, very interesting. And Bob's right. He says we need someone to sponsor the same thing in the House. Well, I mean, this is this really, as I'm reading it, being, you know, possible step one? Because that would be very cool. I would be very surprised that it happened so quickly. Has the pressure been hitting the right places? Okay, so a couple of weeks before the session ends. Well, I reckon, you know, Since I've known all of these folks who have this happening right, you know, outside their doorstep, this is the most I've ever seen even proposed. It's usually been something that just was completely ignored and was just one of those things that happened to those poor people in the mountains, is the impression I always got. So hey, I'll drop Senator Hunter a line, you know. But if you live in West Virginia or any of the states that have this unbelievable, just destructive process taken out on them, that, you know, I'm just, Nanette's got something here. Nanette says there are other senators that feel the same way but are afraid to speak up. If they know that the people are backing them, they may get bold and stand up for this bill. Well, I would hope so. Nanette says if they know the world is watching, they may make some changes. And that's where I think the whole nationalizing the campaign is so crucial. I think having pressure come from other states for them to take some action. And I mean, to outlaw it straight away would be just an amazingly beautiful thing. And here, and there you go, geothermal plants. They got all kinds of useless land now that they can build them on. You know, be all kinds of nice seamed rock formation exposed there, in which to be able to go and find lower seams to store carbon, which I still don't think is the way to do it. I think it's, you know, if you've got a source already, I would reckon maybe it'd be fine. But for the excess off of the solar end of a combined system, you could do it right there. Yeah, other countries tuned in that. But I definitely think, you know, that one of the things, one of the ideas that's come out of the campaign recently has been, I've read a couple of places where, you know, if this thing was going on anywhere else, in anyone else's backyard, there would be hell to pay. It would be a very different story if this was happening in Massachusetts somewhere, or this was happening, say, I don't know, California somewhere. And stressing, you know, think about this. What if this was going on in your own backyard? And it was having this effect on your drinking water, and it was having this effect on your economy, as in there is none because of the practice, which requires virtually no crew. Would you not want it stopped? And if you saw a state blindly doing it, and suddenly were made aware of it, wouldn't you put pressure on them to stop it? I think, you know, I really think is going to be one of the most crucial links in the whole chain to make it a reality. But hey, good on Mr. John Hunter. Who knows? But yeah, I would imagine he'd be watching over his little shoulder in the dark, and would have a few minders at the moment. I wouldn't put the coal companies past much when it came to actually a tooth and nail fight over whether they can have the practice or not, because it makes it so cheap for them. They're just raking it in, and they're laughing. Screw you guys, we're gonna take our money and run. What? You wanna be able to, you know, have a local shop, and you want local businesses? You want jobs? Nah. Just rot until we take your land. Why don't we take a break, Bob? And I'll go and find the other stuff I was going to talk about. So you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to ring in, give us a buzz. We're just kind of doing whatever today. You're listening to The Horn, America's Liberal Voice. We'll see you in a few.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Let's try to get this straight now. The Kurds in Iraq are supposed to be the one group that supports the U.S. occupation, and yet U.S. ally Turkey is now invading the Kurds in northern Iraq. Turkey's been bombing there for a couple weeks now, and last week it sent 10,000 troops over Iraq's border to go after members of the Kurdish Workers' Party. This is an illegal invasion of a sovereign country, which the U.S. is supposed to be protecting, but the Bush administration gave the Turks the green light for this offensive. Bush knows something about illegal invasions, so who is he to oppose this one? But if he thinks this will help keep Iraq together, he's got another thing coming. The Iraqi government, not surprisingly, has condemned the invasion, and even Kurds who aren't members of the PKK are outraged at the Turkish incursion. It's not unreasonable to suspect that many, if not most, Kurds will now turn against the U.S. occupation. And if that happens, the U.S. military will be exposed on all fronts, and it'll take more than a surge and more than a pause to control the chaos that Bush has wrought. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
Has anyone ever said, "You are the picture of health"? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
And rock and roll is all my brain and body need.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fox Up. All of a sudden, it was like a flashback. I thought Agnes was running the show there for a second. While we were doing other things off air there, in the chat room, a few issues came up, and Nanette was asking about, you know, if the carbon storage would be, you know, safe because of, you know, they only own like the surface title, what happens underneath. Well, and I mentioned to her, and I'll say it on air, that, you know, I would think in West Virginia there would be, you know, these wasted areas that would be much more suitable, and there are concerns about if you do store. This is why I'm not. This is why I like with the solar geothermal idea. You can do it with above ground storage, but if you go and just inject into a seam in the earth, it can potentially leak. And it was only in the last couple of years that I think it was somewhere in Europe that basically a whole town was killed by a natural carbon gas release from just below the rock. And it was a big cloud, high carbon dioxide content, killed everybody. And so, you know, keeping it away from probably in a valley so that if there was a leak or something that it could be captured and contained, and, you know, some guidelines for how you can how close you can have residences, maybe, I don't know, but you know, it'll only be a small area, but it has great impact, such a huge change in the atmosphere in a small space. And you wouldn't go storing it right underneath a developed area. I think it would be too easy to find much better places. If I'm not mistaken, that's still kind of the consensus view out there. But I was trying to find this. I was actually trying to find the original story, but having no such luck. I know I covered it somewhere, but I don't know where to find it. And Bob says in the mines, carbon gas death is known, he thinks, as white damp. Well, it wouldn't be fun, that's for sure. I think common sense just would dictate that you wouldn't put the carbon stores underneath populated areas. Kind of just sounds to me like the prudent thing. And no, it's all right, Nanette. Wasn't really off track at all. It was putting the two things together. And I'm still curious about the hemp thing, and I haven't had any joy on that issue. And thanks for reminding me. I will try again. Because maybe industrial hemp could be a great way to maybe bring back those dead zones created by mountaintop removal mining. So who knows? I think it's a question that, until we have an answer, needs to be asked continually. So I don't know. We'll see if we can find some more on that. I'd like to get someone on that could talk about it, hoping that maybe they'd already looked into it and said, yeah, stands the best chance of, blah, 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 blah. I'm also told it's not white death, white damp, it's black damp. It's nasty, however you say it, but the black does make more sense. We are talking about coal here. We're starting to see, that there's still deniers out there, but we're starting to see around this world the reality has sunk in with a large portion of the population. And that even if the science isn't all exactly right, it's not good. It's not, it's not good what we do. And it won't do us any harm to stop doing something that we can't keep doing forever and ever. Because whether you like it or not, sustainability is the reality. There's this great animation out there, and I think it's called The Story of Stuff, and it's like at .org or .net or something. And it takes, I think 40 minutes to an hour. And it's this great little narrated human with a pencil drawn flash animation thingy that's really nicely done. And I've mentioned this before, I believe. And goes through just the story of stuff, from raw materials through to manufacturing, distribution, sales, consumption, disposal. And how it, the way that it's explained in general, you kind of would think that it's all hunky-dory, but actually no. There's not nearly enough detail or scrutiny on the raw resources and the disposal. And how we've got, you know, I think that there's, we're at the moment of a global, you know, light bulb going off, where where are you going to put your stuff? Yeah, where are you going to put all that crap? The way we're going at the moment, we can't keep it up, and it's a little stupid, and it's a lot selfish. And we can still have really full gadgeted lives with all kinds of cool stuff and not be as wasteful. Because not only do we just waste, you know, do we buy lots of stuff, we buy lots of stuff we don't really need. So what purpose did it serve? It only put money in some company's pocket, probably. But we're seeing the profound effects of, you know, a significant change that happened decades ago, where the American people changed. They were no longer workers. They were consumers. And we no longer make stuff. We only consume stuff. That in itself is not sustainable. You can ride it for a hell of a long time and make it seem like it's a great idea. But at some point, the cheap fuel, which in our case was cheap fuel, and more recently, cheap credit, that fuel's going to run out. And the reality is becoming clear to many that we have to change a couple of fundamental things in the way this world operates. And to use the, you know, those wonderful stats, the United States, 5% of the population uses 1/3 of the world's resources. Remember that. 5% of the world's population, but uses 30% of the world's resources annually. You know, you got to know that there's got to be a better way than that. You got to be able to do it better than that. It's far too piggish to ever last. And maybe, and hopefully we just haven't been so piggish and so slow to go, hey, guess what, guys? All the firewood's running out. And we forgot to plant trees. neither did anybody else. It's a, you know, I was talking the other day, and I don't even remember how far I got through it before my connection crapped out. But I was talking about that doomsday seed vault thing up in Norway. And, you know, as someone actually finally put some thought in, I really would love to know who owns and controls it. Because they're going to keep seeds of absolutely everything they can get their hands on. And stuff that's endangered, they will get first. That way, if there's a major disaster, whether it's a, God forbid, a full-on thermonuclear war, global warming, mad floods, whatever, disease, they will be able to go to this place and pull out viable seed and reconstitute colonies of species of plants. And I think it's brilliant. It's just, it's actually very smart. You know, why didn't we actually have this before? Why are we only getting to it now? And it's a pretty amazing place. So far underground that it can handle thermonuclear war. Virtually, you know, multiple times the worst global warming temperature changes it can withstand without power for 250 years or something insane. They've really thought long term and hardcore about it. And, you know, like I say, you know, I'm curious to, I just want to know who is running that show. I'm not saying they're evil. I just want to know more so I can feel better that they're not evil, because I like the idea. All right. Before we run out of time, I guess I'll do this. I told you I was going to read you one of the Aboriginal dream stories. It's not very long. Let's hope I can do it some justice. And you can find these at dreamtime.net.au. And it's just called The Creation Story, told by Auntie Beryl Carmichael. And it begins, this is the creation story of, Aboriginal pronunciation dictionary. Giyampa country, as well as the land belonging to Eagle Hawk and Crow. Eagle Hawk and Crow are recurring characters in their stories. Now, long, long time ago, of course, in the beginning, when there was no people, no trees, no plants, whatever on this land, Guthy Guthy, the spirit of our ancestral being, he lived up in the sky. So he came down and he wanted to create the special land for people and animals and birds to live in. So Guthy Guthy came down and he went on creating the land for the people after he'd set the borders in place and the sacred sites, the birthing places of all the dreamings, where all our dreamings were to come out of. Guthy Guthy put one foot on Gundarbuka Mountain and another one on Mount Grenfell. And he looked out over the land and he could see that the land was bare. There was no water in sight. There was nothing growing. So Guthy Guthy knew that trapped in a mountain, Mount Minara, the water serpent Yowie, he was trapped in the mountain. So Guthy Guthy called out to him, Yowie Yowie. But because Yowie was trapped right in the middle of the mountain, he couldn't hear him. Guthy Guthy went back up into the sky, and he called out once more, Weowie! But once again, Weowie didn't respond. So Guthy Guthy came down with a roar like thunder and banged on the mountain, and the mountain split open. Weowie, the water serpent, came out, and where the water serpent traveled, he made water holes and streams and depressions in the land. So once all was was finished, of course, Wiawe went back into the mountain to live, and that's where Wiawe lives now, in Mount Manara. But after that, he wanted another lot of water to come down from the north through our country. Old Pundu, the god, it was his duty to drag and create the river known as the Darling River today. So Cod came out of the mudlark, his little mate, and they set off from the north, and they created the big river. Flows right down, water flows through our country right into the sea now. And of course, this country was also created. The first two tribes put in our country were Eagle Hawk and Crow. And from these two tribes came many tribal people, many tribes. We call them subgroups today. So my people, the Nigiyampa people and the Bakarindi further down are all subgroups of Eagle Hawk and Crow. So what I'm telling you, the stories that were handed down to me all come from within this community. So that's an Aboriginal dream story. And they're all about creation. They're all about the creation of all the different species. And dreams are thought of as being more important in many ways to guiding one through their life. It wasn't so much that it was the reality, but it was so much more important than the reality, but it actually impacted on the reality. So anyway, check some of those out. There were supposed to be audio and video of them, but I couldn't get them to work. So I was actually hoping to have some really good elders' voiceover doing it, not my terrible tromping through. But there's an animation series on the ABC. You might be able to find these. They might be connected to a thing called Message Stick, and they tell a lot of these stories in animations and narrations that are really, really nicely done. Little, you know, anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes, I think they are. They're varying lengths. They're all really, really good. And it's the imaging and the artwork, too, that I think, you know, it's one of those things. Imaging on radio. yeah, it's neat stuff. I'm hopefully going to have more on the Aboriginal people on this show. I have so much reading to do, I couldn't even tell you. But I will get some more of that. But anyway, I think that's it. I think Bob's telling me that's it. So thanks to Bob. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to Ben Burst at the White Rose Society. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions. Thanks to Bob and the bloggers. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Put me working for you. So I jumped on the fence and I yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner. We'll be right back.
membership card to get inside. Around the plate at the end of it all, I didn't have a penny to pay. So I got me a pen and a paper, and I made up my own little sign. I said, thank you, Lord, for thinking about me. I'm alive, I'm doing fine. Woo!
Sign, sign, everywhere a sign.
Walking out the scenery,
breaking my mind.
Do this, don't do that, get your
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
That was a special banjo beat, I think, for today. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you've been listening for the last 2 hours, we've been filling in for Guy James, Bob Kincaid, Peter Godbold, and I, and talking about, the various and sundry things that we each talk about. It is the Week in Review here on the Inside Scoop. That means all talk.